Welcome to the National Hour on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour always brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. We'll spread this out nationally by bringing in Frank Saravelli, Hockey Insider, President of Hockey Content, Daily Faceoff. The man is going to start to get real busy in the next little while. Frank, how are you, man?
I'm good, Kipper. I think it's already been a pretty busy week with this Corey Perry contract termination, as well as a little trade by the Blackhawks on Tuesday night and all sorts of stuff going on. It's been a crazy week.
Okay, before we get into the pickup of a $4 million contract to replace a $4 million contract, just any fallouts after this, Frank? Is there a sense that this story is done, or are we going to start hearing other things trickle in?
No, I think this story is pretty far from over. We still don't yet have a really clear picture as to exactly what Corey Perry did. More than that, I think it remains to be seen whether or not the NHL Players Association will grieve this decision by the Chicago Blackhawks to terminate the contract. I just wrote a story on dailyfaceoff.com that outlines really how unprecedented it is for a player to have his contract terminated for conduct that may be considered inappropriate but not illegal. The Blackhawks acknowledge that there was no criminal investigation here, and with that, you know, we've seen other players have their contract terminated before, but more often than not, there was something involved that had an illegality to it, such as Mike Richards being charged for crossing the border with the Los Angeles Kings in receipt of illegal prescriptions, like things like that. This is not that. And so I think a lot of people are taking a step back saying, hold on a second here. We need more information before just saying, oh, it's okay to have a team terminate a player's contract. And not only that, Kipper, I think there's actually been a couple teams in the last 24 to 48 hours that may be interested in adding a player like Corey Perry. So I think there's a lot left to be written here.
Well, that and, you know, there's still a verdict to be kind of had on the Chicago Blackhawks' handling of this. And it seems like the beat reporters, people around the team, are kind of saying they've done a pretty good job here. Like, you know, we included didn't love the press conference necessarily, but, you know, they grabbed Perry out of there. They did their investigation. They terminated him outright. Like, it sounds like they followed things to the letter of what a plan would have been, I guess.
Yeah, I think they also, at the same time, probably had a few hiccups PR-wise in terms of just giving people 20% more information so that you don't have social media spin its wheels and ridiculous, disgusting rumors get legs. And more than that, you know, I just think some clarity here. Did the Chicago Blackhawks, this is one question that still remains, did they operate here in a fashion that, because they're still reeling from the 2021 investigation that revealed that they covered up a sexual assault back in 2010, are they now taking a bit of a leap in this case and trying to act really in the best interest of the organization and the franchise to try and build up some of that trust? I think we all understand how sensitive they would be given what happened, but did they potentially overreact here? I think that's also a fair question to ask, but it's one, unfortunately, that we can't answer because we don't have all of the definitive information yet.
Listen, you're part of the Professional Writers Association here. I think you got a pretty good gauge on a level of information and, you know, where it starts, where it can end, what's private, privileged information, what should come out in the public. If there's more to this story that includes a third party, a possible lawsuit, a possible settlement, is that stuff that the public is owed, or does it remain no one's business but our own?
It's a hard question to answer because, again, we don't know the details that are involved. We don't know how serious or potentially.
But Frank, you're going to try to find out, are you not?
Yeah, I mean, I think here's the thing that I'm struggling with, and I can tell you quite openly, part of the reason why there hasn't been more detail that's been reported is that there's been a lot of conflicting details going back and forth. You hear one thing from someone, you hear something totally different on the other hand. And that part has been really difficult to wrestle with as a reporter. You're dealing with, as you mentioned, the potential for third parties to be involved, the potential for lawsuits, the potential for defamation. You're dealing also with a player who's had a pretty sterling reputation in his NHL career and a borderline Hall of Fame guy who is really well liked by teammates that now all of a sudden finds this week his career somewhat burnt to a crisp. So there's a lot of different facets in play here that I think has made this story certainly one of the more difficult that I've had to pursue in my career in journalism.
Okay, be good on Perry?
I'm good.
All right. Yeah, so we just had our first hour talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs, and everyone on defense is hurt, and they weren't great at defending before that. So we're trying to pinpoint some names. I know that there's an article in Daily Faceoff, I think Matt Larkin wrote it, about potential defensive partners or who might fit for the Leafs. Are there some names out there that you could see as a fit in a trade for Toronto?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty easy to draw a line, Justin, from Toronto to Calgary.
Yeah.
And I would suspect that the first name that Brad Treliving would be calling about would be Chris Tanev, based on his defensive prowess. And you don't have to really look much further than the clip in the last week with him blocking a shot with his face to realize that this is a guy that certainly has the commitment required to win in your own end. That's one guy that I would circle. I think here's the thing that the Leafs have run into in those conversations that they've had with the Flames and Brad Treliving's former employer is, A, they're not really ready to make a move yet with some of their pending free agents because their team has gotten back in the race. And B, I think the other reason why they're not in a rush is because the trade deadline isn't until March 8th. There's no reason, unless someone's knocking your socks off, to go out and execute a trade at this exact moment in time, especially while your team is still hanging around and you don't have a fully formed idea yet as to exactly what they are. Are the Flames under 500 at this quarter juncture of the season? Yes, they are. But with the mushy middle in the West and the ability to climb into that wild card race, I think it's unfair to count them out just yet. And until they are out, I think they're going to wait and hold off on making any judgments. So that's one aspect of this that I think has been a roadblock in terms of the Leafs trying to find defensemen. And I think the other part is you want to make sure that whoever you're getting is making an impact. And there's a lot of names that have been floating out there of late that you might say, hey, the Leafs could go out and get this guy. And the answer might be yes, but is he going to make a big enough impact to be worth the squeeze?
What about a guy like Zadorov? Do you think the Leafs or anybody else that's interested in Zadorov would need to trade as if they're going to re-sign him? We've seen so many, particularly in Toronto, through Kyle Dubas, trade for pretty big, significant names, only to watch them walk out the door months later here. Are the Leafs in a position to rent Zadorov at all?
I love renting. I say that as someone who owns my house, but I love the idea of renting a defenseman, particularly because you never really know how the fit is going to be. And like, I would say that specifically with regards to Tanev, because he is injury prone and he is a little bit older, that he's definitely the type of player that you hang out with and date instead of marry. But when it comes to Zadorov, like I think the less commitment, the better, because yes, he's someone that can impact your team, can provide an element that some other guys can't. You guys saw firsthand in Toronto, big hit, scores a goal. But at the same time, I think the overall overarching thought on Zadorov is that he's truly a third pair defenseman. And if that's what the Leafs are acquiring, no sense really paying a pre-market premium to lock him up when you could then just wait and see how things unfold. And I think that's kind of really the beauty of what the Leafs have gone through this past summer is Domi, Bertuzzi, Klingberg, you know, all one-year deals. And I think probably you're sitting here right now feeling, hey, pretty good, November 29th. Thank God we didn't really go much longer. Maybe the one exception to that is Bertuzzi, but Klingberg, like, you don't often get a redo on something like that. And the Leafs now have that second life.
Frank, the one thing that I sit in here and pull my hair out about daily is, like, the Leafs probably need to make a trade, and it's like, but it's hard. Kipper tells me, but it's hard to make a trade. You know, is it that hard? Is there going to be trades at some point, or has the salary cap just ruined the trade market?
It's not just the salary cap. I think part of it, Justin, is general managers are naturally risk averse. And I was actually talking about this with Doug Armstrong a couple weeks back when I was in Toronto at the Hall of Fame. And it was when he first started in his career, and there's a lot of sort of first time, you know, new younger GMs that are in these roles. He said, what you go through is this feeling like you're only going to make a trade if you know you're winning it. And there's so few of those to be had that I think the big part of that is people are looking for an easy PR win as opposed to a deal that just sort of makes sense. And I'll give you a perfect recent example. It's happened within the last 24 hours, this Beauvillier deal, trading him to Chicago. The Blackhawks are without Taylor Hall for the rest of the season. Then Corey Perry's gone. You need some support, some roster support, some scoring support for Connor Bedard. Okay, so you bring in Beauvillier. The Canucks were in a spot previously where trying to move off salary from their books was probably going to cost them money. Now these two things happen in Chicago, and all of a sudden a deal materializes where they can get a fifth round pick instead of giving up something. And you can kind of just nod your head and shake hands and say, okay, this makes sense. This works for both sides. There probably needs to be more of that. And the other thing I would say as a third option would be, or a reason would be, the fact that GMs kind of need a deadline in order to make something happen. It seems like if there wasn't one on March 8th or whenever the date is every year, that I would bet that we'd see way fewer trades than we already do.
We're talking to Frank Zeravelli, Hockey Insider, with Daily Faceoff. It seems like the Oilers have calmed things down a little bit. Has their search for a goaltender calm down as well?
I think maybe a little bit, because I was just talking about the idea for the Leafs of weighing impact and cost. And that's one thing that Edmonton really ran into, was there's a whole host of names out there that they could go and get, but I'm not sure that they were sold that relative to cost that they'd be getting a guaranteed impact. And that is certainly the nature of the beast with the position. I like to say goaltending is voodoo. You never really know what you're going to get week to week, let alone with a guy changing teams in the middle of a season. And I think that even though his play might not have warranted it, there's a chance that we see Jack Campbell back called up to the NHL in relatively short order. I think they were thinking sometime around December 1st in order to try and get his game in order. He had a rough start to his tenure in Bakersfield, and I think at some point they'd probably swap him out for Cal Pickard and try and get him going again at the NHL level. We'll see if that works, but that's their thought process right now, as they seem to be outscoring and outrunning a lot of the problems that they had a few weeks back.
Frank, I know you have the audacity to not exist in Canada, but we talk about the Canadian teams quite a bit up here. You know, the Leafs likely to be active. Any other Canadian teams that you think are going to be the most active out of this group of, you know, everyone kind of thinks they can be a playoff team?
Yeah, I'd say the Vancouver Canucks are right at the top of that list. And the reason for that is just look at the newfound cap space that they have after moving off of Beauvillier. I mean, Vancouver, since Patrick Alvin took over as GM and Jim Rutherford as president of hockey ops, they have been preaching cap flexibility. And now really for the first time in their tenure, after trading away a bunch of pieces and at times paying really significant prices, as we're reminded with Chicago's Jason Dickinson scoring another goal last night, they've paid high prices to get rid of guys on their roster. This time around, they were a little bit more fortunate with Beauvillier, but they have some cap flexibility that for a team that's really struggled with injuries on their back end, Carson Soucy out for a while, Tyler Myers was banged up. They're now using depth defensemen in their lineup again, which they were really trying to avoid. They've had to break up their top pair that was so good between Hronek and Hughes, that you're now counting on Noah Juulsen and Cole McWard and all these guys that probably are fringe NHL players. That to me was the biggest story as to why they weren't a playoff team last year and their hot start this year. The contrasting image there is that the Vancouver Canucks put competent defensemen that have experience in their lineup. And now that some of those guys have gone down, it feels like they're kind of hanging on for dear life. as they try and stabilize that, which I think they're going to try and attempt to do here in the next week or two.
Frank, when we look at the standings outside of maybe San Jose and the Sharks, everybody wants to stay in it and try to, I think, make the playoffs here. I mean, outside of the two teams I mentioned, who do you see eventually putting up the for sale sign and start making some players available? 95% of the league, I think, is thinking that they're going to the playoffs.
Well, that was actually another reason that I didn't include in why we haven't we seen very much activity is go through some of those teams. The Chicago Blackhawks would sell. They've got nothing left to pick at. The Minnesota Wild aren't there yet. The Anaheim Ducks are trying to build in the other direction through some of the youth that they have. Who are they going to move? Adam Henrique? I mean, go through some of these teams and then switch to the Eastern Conference. There's not a long teaming list of these clubs that are really trying to put a bunch of players out there. Are some of them open for business? Would the Vancouver Canucks move Connor Garland? Of course. Would the Philadelphia Flyers be open to moving some of their pending UFA defensemen? Sure, if the price is right, but we're at this sort of juncture where too many teams are in the mix competitively because of the way the standings work, because of the mushy middle that exists in the Western Conference, that everyone's just kind of sitting back saying, well, hey, if I could roll the dice this year, if you're St. Louis and you don't have to tear down and continue to take away players and still make the playoffs this year as an absolute bonus, St. Louis, Nashville, both those teams are both sort of rebuilding, retooling quietly and hoping to be competitive in 2 to 3 years. But what if you can just kind of sneak in your market? It's just an absolute bonus that some of those teams are like, well, why would we give up right now?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And last one for me, Frank, is kind of related to that. Just, you know, we've seen Dean Evason get fired. We saw Chris Knobloch come in. It just doesn't feel like there's a lot of coaches in a position where they're going to get fired, but we are seeing that teams can't do a lot. It's one of the only moves they have. Is there anyone else you think, like looking around the league, that could potentially be on the hot seat this season? It feels like one of the only options you have as a GM to try to jumpstart your team.
Yeah, I think everyone's been focused, Justin, on DJ Smith in Ottawa. And not to say that there's not reason for that, but every piece of intel that I can gather is that the Sens don't have any interest in making a coaching change, that they're trying to stabilize their situation with all the drama that's existed this season between a GM change, a 41-game suspension to one of their players, a first pick forfeiture, all those things that have been piled into this start of the year that has also included some really underwhelming results. So I don't think they're going to do that on make that change with DJ Smith. I think another name to consider would be Lane Lambert on Long Island. I think the Islanders have not found the consistency and success, certainly from an offensive perspective, that they'd like to have. Lou Lamoriello is not afraid to make a coaching change. That's another that I'd keep an eye on. I'm still kind of surprised about Dean Evason and Jay Woodcroft, given the starts that these teams had. I mean, just look at their track record for success. Jay Woodcroft, 643 points percentage in his tenure in Edmonton. You had Dean Evason, who, if he didn't lose the last 7 games to close out his tenure in Minnesota, would have been north of Jay Woodcroft. He finished at 639. So I look at this and I say, we've had some sort of middling results already from some of these coaching changes. Yes, John Hines picks up a first win in his first game with the Minnesota Wild. But on the long term, did these teams make the right decisions? I guess we'll see.
One more for me and a team that I find intriguing to watch moving forward in the new year towards the trade deadline is the Nashville Predators. We saw them go out there, sign Ryan O'Reilly, Luke Shen, yet they might be one of those teams you're talking about that wants to try to maybe make the playoffs while they rebuild. So where does that leave Sammy's favorite goalie, Saros?
He's not in play. I actually had a lengthy sit down with Barry Trotz also when I was in Toronto a couple weeks back for Hall of Fame. And he said, look, when we get to where we're trying to get to in 2 to 3 years, we want UC Saros to continue to be the backbone of our team. We'd like to re-sign him. So I don't have any indication that Saros is in play from Barry Trotz's lips specifically. And more than that, I also don't see this team trying to add in the short term. They don't really have that much left to pick at, as mentioned, and sort of pluck off of this team and sell. Maybe someone like a Carrier at the deadline who's a pending UFA. But the Preds seem pretty content of sort of just staying in this middle where they can sell to their marketplace and their fan base that's used to a high bar of success, that they can be in the mix and ultimately get back to being a team that has true Stanley Cup aspirations for a 10-year run.
Hey, Frank, excellent stuff today, man. Tons of information. Look forward to the next few months and certainly bringing you back on to update us on a ton of stuff moving forward. Thanks for doing this.
Have a good one, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Frank.
Frank Saravelli, Hockey Insider, Daily Faceoff. What
wealth of knowledge.
What do you want to take out of that?
That sitting here in Toronto, it feels like it's hard to make trades, and Calgary has one trade, and no one wants to trade anyone because everyone thinks that they can make the playoff.
Well, they're a perfect example of sometimes not overreacting.
The Flames.
Yeah. Just everybody had them dead out and buried.
Yeah.
And now they're feeling good about themselves and in a position to make the playoffs.
I mean, they are kind of knocking at the door, aren't they? They're
right. Oh, yeah.
So it is. It's that West being weak is going to make it a lot harder for the teams to declare themselves for sale, as you put it, in terms of, you know, some of their assets. So that'll be slow the fun down a little bit.
My favorite goalie not getting traded?
No.
Saros?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Push comes to shove. Someone makes an off, like a big offer. To me, the Kings is like the spot. That's the one to me.
Like I would agree.
Like, because they're running Cam Talbot out there. I get that. But he's playing really well. I get that. But at some point, if you're going to be a Stanley Cup contender, you're going to win it with Talbot? Maybe.
I don't know. You know what the Kings road record is this year?
Games? They're like perfect.
Yeah, 9-0-0.
Yeah.
Haven't lost. It's pretty good.
Center depth.
You know what? I'm really happy to Byfield.
Yeah.
Right?
Because
tons of pressure, contemplating a first pick overall. He slides just, I think, one under and did not get off to the great start. It's the pandemic. He's spending some time in the American Hockey League. But I tell you what, that guy is turning himself into a really good, solid player.
It's almost like the AHL is not a career-ending move for a young player, you know?
Yeah. Like, you can go down there and really hone your skills.
Find your craft. You know, a good example, so he's in the NHL last year, has 3 goals in 53 games. They sent him to the American League where he has 15 points in 16 games in the AHL.
Nine goals.
Yeah. So he finds it, feels himself at the pro level. This year, he's got 16 points in 19 games.
Go spend a little bit of time in the American Hockey League.
Send Crosby down. Everyone needs a little time.
I'm talking 18 years of age.
Okay. Yeah,
19.
No. I don't understand this.
If you're like, you want to protect the junior ranks, right? If you're not going to play for the big club, you have to go play back in junior if you're eligible.
Why do we have to do that though?
I don't know. That's my point.
As a bleeding heart junior hockey fan, because they want to preserve good players playing in small towns and they want to keep the league afloat.
But if players are good enough to play in the American Hockey League, the next player who's good is going to shine at that level.
It's not a development decision. It's a business decision.
For sure, which I am fond of.
Crummy.
I'm fond of.
Yeah, it's great because you get stars to go to your hometown.
Not my hometown. No, but just in general, it's a very popular. Well, not. Anyways, I like that there's guys that go to junior still from the NHL. I like that rule.
It is.
But I'm an 18-year-old adult, and I cannot pick where I want to go to work.
Yeah.
There's just something fundamentally wrong with that.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot to be learned playing against other men. You know, like as you try to graduate to the NHL, playing at that level can, you know, it's wonderful for development and get to be the guy, man, play the big minutes.
Kipper, before game time, you said you wanted to talk about Kane when we were...
Yeah, because he met the media, and I don't know, obviously with
riveting.
Listen, he's.
I was going to cut some tape of it. I was like, oh, no, I'm not.
Listen, don't dump on Pat Kane. I'm telling you right now.
He said the right things. Nothing.
Yeah, I know. I like him.
Yeah.
I like him.
Yeah, sure.
We didn't get a chance to kind of talk about the signing
mm-hmm.
because of, I guess, Corey Perry news, and I don't know.
We talked about it with Jovo. We got the medical side of it with Jovo.
We didn't discuss it. I am somewhat surprised that he would pick Detroit because I don't think that there's any guarantee that they're a lock to make the playoffs.
That was the one thing he did say in the press conference that might have been interesting. He's like, yeah, I hope to help them make the playoffs. It's like, yeah, they're in third in their division and winning. And
you'd think it would have been more of a sure thing if he would have picked Colorado,
Florida,
Vegas,
Boston,
Dallas.
I found the 2.75 interesting.
Okay.
Because it's not nearly the money that we would have first thought, correct?
Well, right.
You thought higher or lower?
At the term.
Higher.
You did?
Yes.
Well, I kind of thought, just from talking to Kip, and kind of, I thought maybe we're looking at like a 3-year deal around $4 million or something like that.
That to me was where I thought it would somehow end up.
I wonder if just because no one has any space, like the good teams are pretty capped out.
Yes. Yeah, you're not wrong on any of that.
Yeah.
Don't.
And I wonder if there's a prove it factor, no one with a bad hip has ever come back and been good.
That's exactly right.
I think what happened was that him and his agent probably thought that we could still find a way to get a decent contract on a multi-year deal. And it didn't exist.
You know, when my wife and I first moved to Toronto from Arizona, they showed us some apartments here, and they were like 500 square feet and $2,000 a month. And we were like, no, we're not doing that. Sorry. Looked like 10 of them. No, I'm not spending that for that size. And eventually, if you want to move here, that's exactly what happened. And I think that's what happened with Kane. You just keep thinking, you're going to look around and you're going to find the 2,000 square foot place that's $1,000 a month. It doesn't exist. It's not reality. So for his services at this point in his career with a bad hip, trying to be on a good team, this is the best he could do.
At a certain point, is the difference of, say, $1 million and 2.7 enough for you to go to a team that you think might make the playoffs or a team for sure making the playoffs?
So you're saying, would he not have been better off to say, I'll go play for the Bruins for 1.5?
Million. It doesn't really matter. The guy is made, if I'm not mistaken, $107 million.
No.
Does it really
You've had money.
Matter?
You still liked money after you had money, right?
But there's that kind of, I don't want to say ego, but there's a principle involved in wanting more money mm-hmm. because you don't want to be totally taken advantage.
Really looked at as like
But I don't
Giordano
know if 2.7 5 does it for
doesn't
me.
Doesn't get you into that respect doesn't, echelon. Like,
I thought 4 would have done it. If I can't get 4 or 3, I might as well take $1 million and maybe go to Vegas or Colorado than Detroit.
Would you like to know his
good point here.
Would you like to know his estimated career earnings?
Yeah, hold on. Guess first. Let me guess.
107.
Yeah, I'll take the over on his number.
115.
Ugh.
Okay.
Whew. Yeah, not bad.
It's a good number.
I'm going to walk back everything I've said so far and agree with you wholeheartedly. He probably should have gone for minimum somewhere, right? And just been a, give the team a chance to add more. And
yeah, but that paycheck still hits your account. You want it to be high.
The old Phil Mickelson burn rate.
I'm cheering for him because our league is really a lot better when Pat Kane's doing his thing.
He did say, he's like, one thing I can do better is basically use my legs. He's like, I can cross over better. My lateral movement is better. And that's all I think of Kane is like, which way am I going?
Sometimes I forget about like the human element of this too. But when you're sitting in the room negotiating with Steve Yzerman, it's probably like, oh, this is cool. Like,
it's, no, he's not. He's Patrick Kane.
You don't think he's sitting across the room from...
it's cool, but it's not affecting him.
I think he's far past that.
You don't think that's going to influence him at all, having Steve Yzerman telling him he wants you on your team? No, it has nothing to do with it.
Nothing. You guys are nuts.
I think as long as it matches the things that you like to hear, then you're fine. Yeah. Then it's like whipped cream and a cherry. So I'm not disagreeing with you, but it has to match with I like what I'm hearing.
Okay.
Overall.
Who had a better career, Kane or Yzerman?
Yzerman, right? Yzerman, for sure. No question.
Not the first 8 years.
Yeah.
Someone who knows stats is going to kill me for that question.
Definitely Heisman. But on my TikTok algorithm, because it was Patrick Kane and I was looking at Patrick Kane stuff, his hat trick came up against the Blackhawks, I think, where they won 7-5 or whatever. Blackhawks. And he just danced Shane O'Brien, cut into the middle, and then backhand cheese the opposite way.
Yeah, Pete Kane was
Chelsea dagger going off. Yeah. It was like, this guy was a killer, man. He was unbelievable in his prime. Poor Shane O'Brien. It was a bad, big,
yeah,
tough clip.
Prime Patrick Kane, man.
Anyways, you guys want to do some game time?
Let her rip, Sammy.
It's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19+. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Now, I was just checking in on some playoff odds because I'd like to do that with the Edmonton Oilers. And the Edmonton Oilers, after their 3-game winning streak, correct, have now vaulted all the way back up to -190 to make the playoffs.
Wow, what a swing. The books are a roller coaster.
They're going back and forth. They don't know what to do with this team, but they are a prohibitive favorite. Well, not prohibitive, but pretty big favorite to be in the playoffs.
You want my betting advice? Hammer it. Just bet that.
Yeah. That's the lowest you're going to get it in a while.
The pressure right now on Connor to be good every game.
But it's just going in again.
Is off the charts.
11 points in 3
games. It's just going in again.
He was like 59th in the league.
I know.
A few days ago, he's 9th now.
And he cannot take his foot off the pedal at all.
He had 150 points last year. He can do this. He can will this team.
Nah, see, you just
to the promised land.
Like you just make it sound like it's just so easy, and it's not.
He's the best hockey player I've ever witnessed do hockey, and he's in the prime of his career. If he can't do it, no one can. I believe is the great cheerleader chant from my youth. I'm a full on believer in the guy. I understand that it's not that easy, and the risk may be too much ask lead to injury.
I'm just talking about the pressure to perform every night. And it would be nice every once in a while if he didn't have that. But I guess because of the cap and the way it's built and the constant, you're the highest paid guy outside of Austin next season, that you just need to score 3 points every night.
I'll give you 2.
And if it doesn't bounce, if it doesn't go his way, we see the Connor that we saw a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But
it's awfully early in the season to now wear that.
Yeah,
for him.
That is, I will say, maybe the best point about the hole they dug for themselves is that there's no leeway now. They took the wiggle room out to have a 5-game losing streak.
I'm watching these games now, and I don't know if it's confidence. I don't know if it's going in again. I don't know if he's feeling better. But he looks like Connor McDavid again.
Dude, he scores on that breakaway. He barely flinched to celebrate.
And his shootout goal last night was just like the easiest thing he's ever done in his life. Like he really just looks like himself again. So
he does.
I think he was playing hurt, boys.
There are also times when he can look like that and still look behind him and see Evan Bouchard right beside him and go,
why are you here?
Why are you here
right now?
Well, he got all the way up there in 3-on-3 last night, and he had a tap in and missed it at the end. So the other thing, and he's +350 now to be the MVP. Well, so maybe have an eye on that, too.
Were you kind of nervous for them a little bit at 4-2 and then watching it go to 4-4 last night with, five minutes to go?
They were carrying the play in the third period. And all of a sudden, 2 go in. And how about the Golden Knights having their fourth line on the ice with 2 minutes left in the game? Keegan Colson are standing in the blue paint. He bats one in midair. It's like there's not many teams that are putting their fourth line out there.
So good.
The other 2 quick ones I had for the playoff odds, the Flames are +105. So they're starting to believe a little bit in the Flames. They are in a playoff spot.
Yeah.
You know,
I want a better number on that, I think.
And
too many teams.
And just to mention the Red Wings, because we were talking about Patrick Kane, they're +100 to make the playoffs.
And you had mentioned the tougher teams that they were facing now in Calgary, Vegas, Dallas, I think Thursday. So big challenges, but they already beat Dallas a week ago. So.
And Vegas, too. I think the best thing that could happen for the Flames is clarity, as in, they win, go on a run here, they get hot, they win 5 in a row, or they lose 5 in a row and decide to go the other direction. The sort of wishy-washy is where you don't trade the people you need for assets before they get hurt, and you don't make the playoffs anyway. So they need clarity.
And the last thing I have for a game tonight is Capitals visiting the Kings. One team can score and defend. One team can't score. Give me the Kings minus a goal and a half plus 120.
Like that.
That was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll discuss a little Brock Besser leading the league in goals.
Rocket Richard.
Who saw that coming? And also, former Norris Trophy winner coming back play tonight.
Oh, yeah.
We'll tell you who after the break. Real Kipper and Bourne.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, after dropping 4 of 6, the Vancouver Canucks with a big win last night against Anaheim, sinking like a stone.
Who, Anaheim?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh boy.
And Brock Besser, 17th goal of the season, leads the league. We're almost...
I know.
We're coming close to Christmas.
I heard. I think
no one saw that coming.
I think it was our boy Tim McAuliffe who said called the Brockett Richard Trophy for Brock Besser, which I like. Yeah, the Canucks have some unbelievable seasons going on. Obviously, his is noteworthy. First time in NHL history, a team has had four players with 25 points in 23 games to start the season. So they have four of them just humming along.
It's a crazy turnaround for Besser. He was maligned.
Yeah.
Like, that was a guy that...
A year ago, he was talking about trade, right?
Yeah, he was a guy that they were... I feel like he was offered up, like...
Not only offered on trade, but, you know, contemplating how much money we might have to hold back to move the contract.
Jeez.
And, I don't know, lead the league in scoring, and it's only costing you
December.
$6 million right now is looking pretty good.
Not too bad. So
but,
that,
you know,
that's
the other thing, too, is, you know, he lost his dad, and it hit him hard, naturally. But you can never underestimate where guys are sometimes emotionally and how it's affecting them.
I know.
You don't talk about it in the media. You don't share that sort of stuff. But there's no question that he seems at peace with a lot more today than in the last little while, which I'm very happy for him.
It is a crazy thing that we come on here and everyone else, you know, that does sports analysis, and we just have to kind of assess the play without knowing, what's going on at home and personal lives and whatever and how much guys can be affected by it. So we're just like, I think he's not trying very hard. You know, it's like sometimes there's real meaningful reasons for.
Yeah, sort of like you and... Our first hour telling us that you watched the third period first.
Yeah, I did.
Of last night's
I had to
Leaf,
watch it out of order.
Leafs the game last night against Florida.
Can
and there's
why?
A very good reason why.
The Quentin Tarantino of hockey viewings.
I like to do things. I feel like, my kids go to bed, and I was on Hockey Central last night with Gazdick and Jammer and DA, so I didn't get home till later.
This guy's just do it all.
I was doing some things. And so when I get home, I can start it from the beginning, but then you miss out on the social media element and our group text. And you guys are all over it last night. You send the messages.
We were hot last night.
Isn't there that feeling of being left out?
Yeah, so I need to be there live for the rest of it and then go back and watch the front
and
half.
And this is why advertisers love pro sports. There ain't taping.
Miss.
You just proved that theory.
For sure.
You can't tape.
And then by theory, by the way, I tell myself that I'll have a different perspective than you guys call out because I'll have watched it out of order. It's actually good for the show is how I tell you.
No recording.
Yeah.
It's not. The group chat isn't hot every Leafs game, but certain ones it warms up.
Yeah.
I feel like it used to be every game.
We get way less texts from Kip this year that say the opponent sucks.
That's true.
That was a big we have
ironed that out. It's just because the Leafs suck. That's why we can.
That's what it is.
Yeah. So upcoming games.
No, it's just as simple as this. They stink. Exclamation point. Yeah, exclamation point.
Yeah, that's the whole
exclamation
message.
Exclamation point.
Really stinks.
Hold on. I think that's a great segue because we had Valley on yesterday, Steve Alliquette from MSG. And something he said yesterday stuck with me.
Mm.
And it's and then you followed it up. All the teams look the same.
Ah, they're all the same.
Yep.
23 and a half teams.
That bothers me when I heard that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he's not wrong, but I don't want a league where 32 teams look the same.
I don't think fans do either.
Well,
the salary cap.
Thanks, Gary. That's what you wanted.
Can't do anything else. You can't keep good players. And also,
I don't know if I can.
What's it just?
I get the salary cap handcuffing yourself.
Extreme parity, Kip, and they got it.
But I think, Kip, your point is about
extreme mediocrity.
Well, they got parity.
But I also think that, you know, how far can we refine excellence? Like, you know, goaltenders are all like precision now, so they all have to look the same to maximize efficiency and whatever. They can't look that different if you want to maximize efficiency, and maybe that's elite talent in hockey. Kind of looks the same a lot.
So, that's what they would argue, that mediocrity of what the league looks like, everybody looks the same. On their side of it, they would say
everyone's
parity.
Yeah.
Everyone's it. Like, let me read this list of teams to you that's leading the league and if they could win the cup. Vegas.
Yeah.
Rangers.
Just going, I'll tell you when to stop.
Boston. Vancouver. Colorado. LA. Stars. Florida. Winnipeg. Carolina, Red Wings, Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, you're into that group now where you go,
Like, there are all these teams to me. I guess, like, you look at Vegas as an elite team. You look at the Rangers as an elite team. But, like, the Bruins are scuffling recently. Like, they're not, you look at their roster on paper. Just like, let guys pay more money.
You don't have to look the same, even though you have a similar salary cap. You can't pick different looking players.
True.
Yeah, but
the Leafs did it for years with the
There
the
has
teams.
To be a few meatheads out there that can play.
There are.
We need more meatheads.
They're valued, highly valued.
Just get
Tom Wilson costs a lot of money.
Just get good ones. Just find them. They have to exist. They have to be out there. Junior, East Coast, college.
Yeah, that's right. If you're a young player, just lean into being different. Give us something else, will you? Entertain us.
Yeah, being a meathead pays. What did Tom Wilson just sign?
Oh, he's six now.
7-year, $45 million contract starting next season.
All you have to do is be hyper tough.
Nah, but he's
talented.
He's also really good at hockey.
Yeah, he's like a linebacker on skates.
Yeah, he's really good.
Which helps.
J.J. Yep. Watt had hands.
But Jacob Trouba doesn't look like any other player out there.
Yeah, you can build a personality. Like, I think Florida has that personality of being a tougher team. The Leafs for years
tried
to
steal it. Did you send me something on, I don't know, TikTok or
I
whatever, where someone smacked somebody's head off and put it in a Blue Jay uniform like it was a home run?
Okay, so
what you do? Like, you can't get me the right name of, you know, producer on this show. What's his name? Willie?
James Wilson.
Wee Willie? But you can send me that.
So it was sent to me in one of my 100 group chats. It's a video of Trouba doing the slash.
Yeah.
But then it, like, goes to the bat flip, and it does the bat flip, and he hits, whose head did he hit? Frederick's head into the front row. That's a deep drive. It was very funny. I thought it was great. How did he not get suspended for 10 games? Answering that question.
We should never discuss that.
This one, like, I watched it a couple more times.
Yeah.
I am baffled beyond belief that isn't suspendable.
I think they probably overthought it.
I got it.
And we're like, he's on his... You know, he's falling over and he's pulling away. It's like, it's reckless as hell.
I had it at 3 games.
Yeah, you can't. The old ref can't do
you
that.
You had it higher?
But he slashed a guy in the face.
Yeah.
You could have easily given him 5 for
not
that.
Not a ton of damage, but that's what we do now. We got to make sure, like, if he lies on the ice and rolls around, is that better effect?
That's a good point. He's probably getting suspension.
Right?
By the way,
also, how tough is Frederick?
Give him credit for not milking it.
It's like a pit bull to a stone head.
But there is an appetite for some players to milk it.
Yeah, of course. We Yeah, Bunting played here last year. you mentioned the Frederick Head home run. Also, you mentioned Ohtani today.
Oh,
do
you want to do this?
The Blue Jays in it?
Apparently, according to some people, the Blue Jays are one of the four finalists. Not apparently a exclusive list, but ones that are still in the mix are the Toronto Blue Jays, the Angels, the Dodgers, and the Chicago Cubbies are the four teams that are apparently still really in it.
So Chicago, okay. Los Angeles, what was the other city?
Los Angeles.
LA,
Chicago, Toronto.
I have a sense. I don't know if I'm going to disappoint you or not, but I think the Jays are getting played right now.
For sure. I mean, right. This is something that...
The Jays are a peak leverage team.
Not to do Jays takes here, but a lot of times over the past few summers, where you have to give them, or winners, you have to give them credit. They've landed some big fish. George Springer, Hyunjin Ryu, Chris Bassett, Kevin Gausman. They've landed some big fish. But they've also been like right there for a lot of them, where I think they like to get the narrative out there that they're involved.
I think it's probably the players' side that wants to keep a big market fish in to
the
drive.
Jays will pay for me if you don't.
To drive the price up.
Yeah.
I think it's a mutually beneficial relationship that the Jays like to have their name involved in these kind of things.
What would the Ohtani tax be to come to Canada? You know, if he's going to make 500, they got to pay him six.
I mean, I would say
100.
I would say
million.
I would say it's not my money, but I literally work for Rogers, so maybe it might be my money.
It could affect you. There's nothing left.
Could be my money.
Okay, that would be like really good for baseball in Canada.
I would say that would work out just fine.
There's nothing
can't even pitch
that
next year, though, right?
He can't pitch next year, yeah. But there's nothing that would like you're making that back very quickly. In terms of eyeballs, the people that come to the park, you're selling out every night, the jersey sales, the attention, the ratings in overseas. Like, he is a top five famous guy, maybe like in sports when it comes to the world. So bring him, pay the money. He's going to be, it'll be all great when he just signs with the Dodgers.
All right. As we mentioned earlier, the New York Rangers coming off a 5-1 loss to the Buffalo Sabres will get Norris Trophy winner Adam Fox back in the lineup. They sure could use him. Not really.
No, that Rangers decor.
They're still good without him.
Yeah, they got Ryan Lindgren and Adam Fox, Keandre Miller and Jacob Trouba as pair two, Braden Schneider on the third pair, and then Erik Gustafsson, who, say what you will about him, he's having an unbelievable season for the Rangers. So
yeah, and
that's a hell of a decor.
Big, you know, good matchup with the Red Wings tonight. Be interested to see if they have like a little bump from getting Kane. When's he going to play? Is he playing tonight?
He says in a week against Buffalo, I believe.
Oh, okay. Wait. You want to get him in there. If you're a Red Wings fan, like, oh, he just got Kane, get him in there.
And if you're him, like if he's good to go, what am I missing here?
I'm nervous for him, though.
That it's going to...
Well, how many guys have went down on with a hip issue?
Yeah.
Hip situation.
I don't know that there's one who's come back and had a wildly successful run post resurfacing. You know, we ran through the list the other day. It was Jovo. Jovo played 39 games, none for Kessler.
Eglin? No.
Anyway, but yeah, no one's really had a ton of. Oh, Backstrom.
Yeah.
We don't know how that went. So, yeah, fingers crossed for the guy that he's able to do it. But.
And if he does.
Yeah, Eglin, Kessler, Jovo, Backstrom. Was the four.
And if he does, I wonder how quickly a follow-up contract.
Like if he comes out and lights it up for a couple months, he might say, keep me around, pay me or
Detroit will say, we want to keep you around.
Yeah. I am curious about something you mentioned yesterday that like he could potentially still be a deadline move. Doesn't work for Detroit.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different options. That it's open. It's open based on how he looks, how he feels, how he produces. And he could get traded before the trade deadline, or he could sign an extension.
He said he was
in Detroit.
Yeah, most excited to play with DeBrincat, right? They've had success in the past. He says they're pals off the ice, so that's part of the reason he's in Detroit.
It also kind of feels like it's the start of Emmitt Smith on the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right?
Well said.
All right, boys, we're out of time. Our thanks to Frank Cervelli. Hockey Insider from the Daily Faceoff with some great stuff. As always, glad you're aboard. Get a chance, give us a rating, a review. Love to hear from you. Got issues with Sammy or JB? Lay them all out. I can sympathize with you. Have a great night, everybody. We're back tomorrow.